Tatara, the boat cannot hold no more, and there are at least 8 more boatloads down there. Do you not understand? You are wealthier than any man I have ever heard of. Whatever your problems were, they are over. What do you want to buy?
Revenge.
Okay, revenge. Who?
Danglar, Villefort, Fernand and Mercedes.
Right. We kill these people, then we spend the treasure.
No, we will study them, learn their weaknesses.
Why not just kill them? I'll do it. I'll run up to Paris, bam, 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 bam. I'm back before week's end. We spend the treasure. How is this a bad plan?
Death is too good for them. They must suffer as I suffered. They must see their world, all they hold dear, ripped from them as it was ripped from me.
You would need a better name than Tatara if you are to accomplish that.
Then I shall become a count.
All right. I lied. I did not write down the number of the episode, but it's 15.
Okay.
I think. It doesn't matter. Who cares? 15, 14, I don't care. I'm just excited because I watched this movie today, and I'm super excited to talk about it. If you have not seen the movie we're about to discuss, it was in the title, so I mean, I don't know why you clicked on it if you haven't seen it. But Seth, this is honestly what we'd consider our favorite film.
Most likely, yeah.
It was my favorite film before I even met you, and I didn't even know that it was yours as well, so that was just awesome. But this is the Press Play Podcast. I'm Ian.
And I'm Seth.
And we will be discussing The Count of Monte Cristo, the 2004 film. But before we do all that, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastpressplay, and you can hear us on Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, Apple Music, and all the good stuff. So I watched it today. When did you watch it?
Today.
Okay. So how much fun is this movie? Like, when you watch it, it is just such a good time.
I adore this film.
Every single time. And I'm watching it today.
It's like my little kid.
I'm watching it today, and I've seen it a million times. And there are still parts of this movie that give me goosebumps. Because I'm watching it, and I'm like, wow, that never goes away. And it is. I remember watching this film when it first came out on DVD. My mom rented it, and I watched it with her. And I remember I was 14 years old, and I loved this movie 100%. I wanted to watch it a million more times. And it was just so good.
I remember renting this film for the very first time in a Blockbuster. Not a Blockbuster, a movie gallery.
It was a movie gallery. Those were also a thing.
And I did it because it was on the recommended shelf.
Right.
And I had never seen it. I had never heard of it. And I was like, oh, I'm bored. There's nothing else in here. Everything's out. So I took it and... wow, what a time.
Yeah, and when I first saw it, I did not know that there were other versions of this film. I did not know it was based off of a book by Alexandre Dumas, who wrote The Three Musketeers and so on and so forth. And I've never even read the book. I still haven't to this day. It's just too long for me.
It is a long book.
Yeah, but when I watched it, I remember thinking that this movie is something special. It's very underrated. Not a whole lot of people I know have seen it.
This is probably the most underrated film that we've discussed yet.
Yes, because we go out and every week we go out and we celebrate, another episode. We go out, have a few drinks, and our friends are there. And they even ask us, what did you guys talk about tonight? We tell them. They ask, what are you guys going to talk about next week? And I remember one of our friends being like, we're going to discuss The Count of Monte Cristo. I've never seen it. That doesn't surprise me.
No, I'm not upset.
But I do think that this is a movie that everyone should see because it's just so wonderful. And this is going to be – this next week are going to be two episodes where we are absolutely in love with the films that we're going to discuss. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of movies are like that with us. But after that, we can assure you it will no longer be a love fest after what we're going to do next week.
No, it won't be.
And we'll get into that at the end of the episode as per usual. So this you know what? Actually, I've said enough. I'm going to let you go.
Okay. First of all, this film has a stellar cast. It's wonderfully acted
by literally everyone.
Jim Caviezel pardon me. As Edmond Dantes. Sorry, I got a frog in my throat.
Yeah.
And we got Guy Pearce's smug ass.
He is. He's so good, dude.
Oh, God, did he have fun.
He might be my favorite person in this movie.
Yeah.
I love
Every time he speaks.
Yes. Just the smugness in his voice is just so wonderful. And I love Jim Caviezel. I love Luis Guzman as Jacopo.
Yeah.
This is my favorite role that he's ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got I don't know everybody's names, but, you know, the lady who plays Mercedes, she did wonderful.
Yes, she did. The only one with a French accent, by the way.
And you know, you've got all the other side characters. And I probably watched this movie. The very first time I realized this was probably about 3 years ago, because it'd been a while since I'd seen the film, and I love watching it on occasion. And in walks Henry Cavill.
Yes.
And I was like, that's Superman. As a young kid.
I didn't realize that until he started playing Superman. I was like, wait, I've seen this guy.
Yeah, it was after, I think, Man of Steel came out.
I couldn't place him, and then I happened to watch The Count of Monte Cristo once. I was like, oh my God, that's him.
It was after Superman came out for me that I was like, that's, because I didn't know who Henry Cavill was until Superman, to be honest. I may have seen him in a couple movies. Like, he was in Stardust and some other things, but that was the first time. He just walks in, doesn't say a word, and I thought, that's Superman. That's so crazy. That's awesome. But yeah, he was also really good. Everybody mm-hmm. was just on their A game when
yes,
it came
they were.
To this movie. And
for if you don't know what this movie is about, if you're curious, because you could listen to us talk about it and give you the plot, and it's not going to ruin anything, I promise. This movie's that good. It's about betrayal, basically.
Yeah, which is a story that's been done a million times, but this one,
but
in particular,
Edmond Dantes is a sailor, and they wind up on the island of Elba where Napoleon Bonaparte has been exiled, and Bonaparte gives him a letter. His friend Count Mondego,
Guy Pearce,
finds out about it. He has the audacity to keep secrets from me,
and he's already jealous because Edmond Dantes has a smoking hot fiance.
That's his ultimate motivation, which I find absolutely despicable. All he wanted to do was bone her.
Yeah, and it's not that he was also that was the main goal, but he was also jealous of basically Edmond's entire life, which is
because Edmond was happy with what he had.
Yeah,
he had everything and was completely unhappy.
Yeah, and that's even what he says when he finally. So he gets these other people together who also don't like Edmond because he has
Edmond,
a better
Edmond
life.
Edmond becomes captain of the ship,
the first mate gets kind of screwed, and because he has to remain first mate,
right.
So he's involved in this, and there's this chief prosecutor who Mr. Vieuxfort, his dad is a Napoleon supporter. And that's who the letter was for. So they all find out about it, and they decide that they're going to frame Edmond for treason and send him away to prison. All for their own
Not
goals.
Just any prison, the Chateau d'If.
Which is a real place. I looked it up. You can go visit it, and I'd very much like to do that.
Yes, I would too.
And so they send him off to this Chateau d'If, which is a prison where they don't send their worst criminals. That's where they send people that they are truly ashamed of, is what they say. Mm-hmm. So everybody has an ulterior motive for doing this. Vieuxfort, the chief prosecutor, he does it so that Mondego will kill his father. Mondego mm-hmm. does it so that he can be with Edmund's fiance, Mercedes. And the first mate does it because he was basically screwed out of a promotion.
Yeah, and he just wants to be captain.
Yeah, so that's everybody's main objective. And he gets to this prison for years. He is tortured.
Well, first, let's back up a bit because okay. when he runs, because you don't know that Mondego has betrayed him yet.
No.
So when he goes back into, he runs into, when he almost escapes. He goes back to his house, which is a mistake. Mm-hmm. He goes to Mondego's house and
begs for help.
Begs for help. Okay, do you need money? Yes, please. Thank you. Do you have a pistol? No? Well, good.
And then pulls a sword on him. And that's when you realize that he's the one who screwed him over.
Oh, dude, whenever Edmond says, "It was you?"
Well, then
when he asks him, "Why are you doing this?"
Well, he even says, "It wasn't just me, it was Dunglar's idea."
Yeah.
So that.
But when he asks him, "Why are you doing this?" Oh, it's complicated.
And then later
You're a bastard.
Well, later on, you know, they have a sword fight. Edmond is not skilled in the sword at all. So
nope.
Mondego kicks his ass. And he basically begs with, he's like, "Why are you doing this? Because you're the son of a clerk, and I should not want to have to be you." So everyone's motivations have been explained now.
Yes.
So basically outlining the plot further, he gets to prison, and he's there for years. He meets another inmate who has been, they all keep the inmates separate. Nobody, you don't see daylight. You're in that cell for the rest of your life. So, This priest character has been trying to escape for years, but he ended up digging in the wrong direction, somehow ended up in Edmund's cell, and you find out later, and we'll get to, you know, other plot points, you find out that he has been hiding this treasure map, and he basically uses the treasure map and the treasure to a limitless fortune.
Yes.
To exact revenge on these people. There, we explain the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can get into the good stuff. So, I sometimes when I'm watching this movie, I will skip, and I know I shouldn't, but I will skip the prison scene because it's pretty long. But when I'm watching the movie in its entirety, I love that it does take at least a good 30 to 45 minutes of the movie because they don't just skip over it. They show you just how bad it is in there. How awful he is being treated. Because that's something that a lot of films could waste maybe only 5 minutes doing and explain it in dialogue how bad it was. But no, they show you in great detail how bad things are there. And you understand, you feel for this character. You understand why the longer he is there, he wants his revenge so badly. And you feel it. You feel everything. And I love that they did that. They focused so much of the prison of the movie in the prison, because once you get out of the prison, things just start happening, and it kind of
his plan just starts moving forward.
Yeah, it speeds up a lot. But this is just 30 minutes of the movie, and I applaud them for that.
Which is it's a good decision because you get to see him become friends with the priest. You get to see him
lose his faith in God.
Lose his faith in God completely. He also learns
to read
so much. Learns to read and write. Learns mathematics, economics, other languages.
He learns how to fight. He learns sword and knife.
Yep.
And he basically figures out in the jail cell, once he's being taught all these things, he starts to piece together why Villefort also betrayed him.
Yeah, that was the part he couldn't figure out.
Yeah, because he, up until that point, he didn't want revenge against him. Exactly. I mean, he did screw him over and lie to him, but he didn't know why. And once you find out why, he's on the list.
Oh yeah.
So it was a wonderful sequence of him figuring it out. Also, you see him become educated. He learns how to fight, and then he finds out they're about maybe 6 months away from freedom, and something bad happens in there because they're digging underneath their cells, and there's a cave-in,
mm-hmm.
which crushes the priest. So he only gets he's minutes from dying, and he talks about this person that he used to work for, whose name was Sparta, and had a limitless fortune and buried it somewhere. But nobody knew where.
Yeah, that's why he was locked away in Chateau d'If to begin with, because he said that he didn't know where it was. So
and Napoleon put him there.
Yeah, Napoleon put him there.
And he finds out that he had the treasure map the whole time. Okay. So he breaks out. Pretty cool, by the way. He just kind of...
Yeah, he switches places with his body.
Yes, and they throw him off over a cliff, and he meets Luigi and Jacopo, who are basically pirates.
Yeah, they're pirates.
Like, you can call them smugglers all you want to.
They're pirates.
So these are the first people he's seen in like 13 years. And the first thing they do is, all right, you and him are going to fight to the death because he pissed us off And, you know, there's people on the boat who want him to live, but I can't really do that. So I'm going to have you two fight. And if he wins, then he can stay. If not, then you'll take his place. So he spares Jacopo's life. And Jacopo basically swears an oath to be his...
Oh, complete and total allegiance.
Yeah. He's like, I am your man forever. Oh, I know. And then, you know, they go to the island, find the treasure, and then some stuff happens.
Well, once they find the treasure, you see that he's not happy.
No, he's not happy.
He's not happy at all.
Once he had it in his hands, you saw the joy, and then that night he's sitting by a fire and he's not happy because he's like, I know exactly what I'm doing with all of this.
Oh yeah.
And he says, he's like, listen, I'm going to use this money in exact revenge. And I understand Jacopo doesn't understand because he's like, well, why don't we just kill these people? Because death is too good for them.
Yeah, we're going to study them. They must suffer as I suffered.
And pretty much that's exactly what goes down. So he buys one of my favorite parts is as soon as he throws away the map because he doesn't want anybody to know where the treasure is. He immediately sends Jacopo to find the biggest house
that he possibly can.
And he's like, I'm here to purchase your lovely home. And he's just he's got this horse carriage just filled with gold. And he's like, I will have you horsewhip. Get the hell off my property. And shows him all the gold.
Here's the deed.
Here's the keys. Take it. Thanks a lot. All right. I'm out. I love that scene so much just because there are... This is a very, very serious movie, but it's no short of fun moments.
It has its lightheartedness, yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to have it because...
Especially after what you just saw with the prison. Yeah. Which is why I love the Luigi character so much. Is like, so I would ask who you are, but in view of your shattered clothes and the fact that the Shadow Deep is 2 miles away, what's the point?
Right.
So then you find out that... You know, he starts studying these people, and you find out that, Mondego, already a bastard man for what he did. But it pisses...
Somehow he's taken bastard and concentrated it and
yeah, because now the one thing that he wanted the most was Mercedes.
He squanders it.
Yeah, and he's an adulterous whore.
Everything that he ever had, his fortune, his title, his name... His wife, his kid, he pretty much just abandons love for every single bit of it because he just doesn't, he hates himself.
And if the first time you see him since the betrayal is he's in a duel with some other count because he was sleeping with that count's wife. And just the smugness of the conversation
that he has
with Mercedes after he kills him, she asks him, is he dead? Yes.
Well, unless his heart is located somewhere other than the left side of his chest.
And then he basically admits, he's like, you know, the combination of me and Paris is hardly a recipe for fidelity. Jesus.
I know.
And then he says, now that...
When she says that I was neither ignorant nor happy, yeah. Having known about the two other women before this, I'm sorry, you are humiliated. I hate you.
I know. And he even says, he's like, now that it's out in the open, there's no reason to keep up pretenses.
Yeah.
It's actually quite liberating because now I'm going to go sleep with whoever the fuck I want to.
Pretty much. I love the framing in that scene because they're on separate staircases.
Yes.
It shows the divide between them.
That was good filmmaking. But just the dialogue in that scene, like, I already hate you. I already hate
you. How is it possible for me to hate you more?
Seriously, God. But
watching him get what comes to him is so satisfying because you see everything get taken from him because Dantes, he says to Jacopo, tell all the dealers because he's already losing money. They're not cheating him.
Yeah, he's losing money at the casino.
Tell the dealers, take it all.
And he leased a boat from a bank, and he said, buy that bank. Tell all the other shipping companies to stay away from him because I want him to go back to Dunglar. So he bought the bank. He's like, no, we're not going to help mm-hmm. you. So he has to go back, which is great. And even when he's standing there just pleading, he's like, do try to understand. I have a very large shipment of cotton. Blah 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 blah. Like, oh, I want to punch you in your face.
And then we find out that he has a son.
Yeah.
Mondego has a son. And this springs into action another... It actually accelerates Dantes' plan.
Yes, because...
Because now he has a way to let Mondego know about the gold without actually having to tell him. Because he wants him to steal it.
And get close to him.
Yeah.
Because his original plan was to get close to him at the initial announcement party that he had. But he wasn't there. So he needed somewhere another way to get into his home. And he damn sure did. He had his pirate friends kidnap the son just so he could rescue him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he invited him to his birthday party.
And the birthday party has probably my favorite speech in any film.
I agree. But before we get to that, I love that he is so smug and above everyone else that Mondego is looking Edmond Dantes in the face and still doesn't recognize him.
Nope. Because he's so sure of his victory over that, he basically forgot about him.
Yeah. And even before all of this, before he even found the treasure, he went back to Marseille, which is where he's from, to ask around, and his former boss, who was like a father to him,
mm-hmm.
he didn't even recognize him, but he laid out everything. He's like, yeah, Fernand Mondego, he wed Mercedes, and Edmund's father hanged himself, and Danglars cast me out when I took him on as a partner. Okay, great. Let us know what's been going on this whole time. And even he even says Edmund was like a son, and he doesn't recognize him.
But right.
The one person that does is Mercedes.
Is Mercedes.
And I love that as soon as he's like, may I introduce the Countess Mondego, she's like 5 feet away, and you see the tears. You see the pain in her face when she sees him again.
Oh, yeah.
Her
can't believe it.
Dude, she killed it in this role.
Mm-hmm.
Her emotions are half of what gave me goosebumps, because when she sees him for the first time, I'm like, oh, I gotta warm. I gotta get this off. So, what you were saying?
Yeah. So, Bastard Mondego, he has to go meet with Villefort because Villefort shows up, and they haven't seen each other socially in years. And he basically abandons the party, and he's supposed to give his son's 16th birthday speech, his birthday toast, and he just, I don't care about that. He'll forgive. If he adores me so much, then he'll forgive my absence. So Mercedes, with tears in her eyes, is like, I'm going to have to basically do this, while she's trying to explain things. And then upstands Dantes, introduces himself, and says that he's the one that wanted to do the birthday speech. So he basically saves her face, and he doesn't like her at this point.
No, because
he thinks that she betrayed him.
Yes, that is what he thinks, and he's keeping up appearances, but I think he saved her because when they were dancing before
this... It helped
this,
him get in.
Yeah, but they were dancing before this, and she said that you remind me of someone who is very dear to me. I think that he hated her maybe a little less, but it didn't distract him from his ultimate goal.
Right.
I feel like she might have been somebody that he could have not taken revenge upon, but he still was trying to screw over her husband and family.
Yeah.
And then
didn't care if she was caught at the crossfires.
No, he did not at all. Which, I mean, you got to say this, the man's dedicated.
Yes, he is.
Which I would be, I can't even imagine what is going on in somebody's head like that.
I couldn't either.
But yeah, the birthday's toast is wonderful.
Yes, it is. Because you can apply that to anyone's life. Because what he says is, he says that the son was in the catacombs, and when he was told that they were going to sever his finger and send it back to his family, that he said, do your worst. And life is a storm, my young friend. One minute you're basking upon the beach, and the next minute the waves are crashing down upon you. And I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly. But what makes you a man is what you do when that storm comes. You do as you did in the catacombs. You say, do your worst, for I will do mine. It's just, I don't know, every time I hear it.
That clearly hits you somewhere special.
It does.
But I understand, because that speech is wonderful. and a little bit tear-jerking.
Mm-hmm.
And so you under so the reason that Mondego did not give the speech is because he's up on the roof with Villefort trying to devise a plan to relieve Dantes of his gold, because the son, who's a little snitch rat bastard, by the way, he told Mondego that he overheard Dantes talking about a shipment of gold and the word Sparta. So they figured out that he found the treasure. So they're going to relieve him of it. They're going to steal it. They're going to do all that whole thing. So, all right.
Which played right into his plan.
Exactly. Of course he knew. And so his first victim is Danglars, who also played into his hands perfectly because he knew that Danglars would try to steal the treasure from Mondego.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what he did. So he gets his comeuppance. I don't know if he dies, but he definitely gets hanged.
No, he says cut him down before he can't talk.
Yes. So they catch him mid-theft. And they have this, him and Dantes have a fight, and he somehow gets a rope around his neck and throws him off a boat. And that's the end of that one. Then the very next scene is Villefort basically getting him to admit that it was his idea to get Mondego to kill his own father, Villefort's father, because he was a Napoleon sympathizer, and he did not want that kind of crap in his family because he was trying to, you know,
right,
up his political whatever. All right. Now he gets his.
Admitted in front of everyone, too.
Well, it was in a steam bath. He didn't know there were people there.
Well, still.
Yeah. And
then when he gets in, when he puts him in that little black carriage.
The same one that Dantes was in at the beginning of this film, he leaves him a pistol.
And then what's the first thing this coward does is puts it in his mouth.
Yep. Pulls the trigger.
Pulls the trigger and click.
Nothing. And then you see him coming, like peeping through the little bars. You didn't think I'd make it that easy, did you?
That's great.
Great moment. And so he got his wonderfully. He's going to the same place, but I don't know who's running it now, but who knows? The Chateau d'If. Or maybe he's just going to regular prison.
No, he's going to regular prison.
Well, that sucks. I'd rather see him go to the other place, to be honest with you. But they don't tell you, because who cares? You never see him again. And then up next, or next thing you know, Mercedes shows up at his house, basically saying that, you know, I know who you are, blah, 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 and they fuck. I mean, do I really need to get into the details of all that? They fuck.
Oh, when she shows him that she never took the little ring that she made out of string off her finger. That's sweet.
Yeah, it was just a means to a fuck. And so now we're heading to the climax where Mondego said that he was going to store the gold at his old family estate. So that's where he's going. And he gets there and the treasure chests are all empty. And Dantes shows up. And
no, except for one chest.
One chest.
One chest has a chess piece in it.
Because that was their little, that was a game they played as children. King of the Moment. Which is... I'm so dumb. Who would do that?
I know, right? Wait a minute. You and I do that.
Shut up. And and it is pretty cool. But so they fight, blah, blah, blah. Albert shows up to defend Mondego. Then Mercedes shows up and says that Edmond Dantes is actually your father. And then Mondego has a pistol to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jacopo throws a knife, hits him in the hand. It misses Edmund, but hits Mercedes in the shoulder. She's fine. And then Mondego runs away. He even told him, just go. Go live your life, whatever. But yeah. Mondego knows now Edmund has everything he ever wanted. He's got Mercedes. He's got the treasure. He's got Albert, the son. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going out that way. Turns around, he's like, now I couldn't live in a world where you have everything and I have nothing. Sword fight! And he loses and dies. The end.
Yes.
All right. That's The Count of Monte Cristo. I hope you guys take it easy. Oh, we're not done? No, we're not done.
Not done.
No, we're of course not done. There's your plot. There's everything you need to know about the storyline. Now, what you do need to know is this movie is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
To look at. And it is so emotional. Because we're not going to sit here and go through every line of dialogue that makes us feel things. Just, you know, a lot of the important
stuff. No, because it's almost all of them.
Yeah, just the important stuff. But when you have Jim Caviezel and the lady who plays Mercedes in the carriage, when she finally figures it out, I love that scene so much. She is bawling, crying.
Oh, she loses it, dude.
She loses her mind, and he just shuts her down. And it's fucking...
It's heart-wrenching.
It's heart-wrenching, and then right after that, he kicks her out of the carriage. He's like, Jacopo, get in here. He's like, if you ever do that, if you ever interfere in my affairs again, I will kill you. Yeah, well, you know, I kind of made an oath to protect you, even if I have to protect you from yourself. Just great dialogue.
Yeah.
I don't really know what else to say about the dialogue or the acting or the cinematography or what. It's just so good. Go watch it.
Everything is so good. There's nothing negative I could say about this film. Not one thing. I don't think there's one thing I don't like.
No, not at all. And we skipped a lot of the first
yeah.
maybe 20 minutes of the movie, but...
Well, because it's basically set up.
Yeah, and there's really nothing there to discuss.
The one thing I think, if I could fish for anything, the one thing I think didn't land as deep as I thought it should have was the death of the priest.
I thought they handled that one fine. I mean, he was kind of old, and you know these rocks did fall on him. I feel like he was. If anything, he was probably dying from like a collapsed lung or something.
Yeah.
Which I've had. It sucks.
But, you know, then again, you're halfway through the movie. He's got to escape somehow. You kind of call that he's going to die.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's the one thing I've got is that doesn't hold very much of an emotional...
I think it's because you know it has to happen. Kind of like, yeah. He's kind of like a Billy Bones character. Like in Treasure Island, you know Billy Bones has a map. You know he's lying when he says he doesn't. And then he dies. And as he's dying, he gives the map to Jim. This is basically Jim Hawkins parallel, pretty much. Because, you know, people are after this map. And, you know, he gives it to the one person he can trust. It's been done. And I knew it was going to happen. But I don't disapprove of the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you do, that's fine, and I know that you,
it's not that I disapprove of it.
I know it's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
No,
it's not a big deal at all. Like I said, I'm fishing.
Yeah, you know. I think there could have. When I was younger, you know, I loved sword fights, and the one at the end was kind of short for a climax.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something I get over.
Well, it was also very realistic.
Yeah, that's another thing. Because, I mean, this isn't the
Princess Bride. That's what a sword fight would be.
This isn't the Princess Bride where it's going to go on for like 5 minutes. I understand now.
No, after he blocks it with his arm, he's like, damn, that hurt.
Yeah.
It cut me, you know. That whole fight was probably 2 minutes long.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that. But when I was
younger. It served its purpose.
Yeah, when I was younger, I thought sword fights went on forever. But they don't. Not
they
in
don't.
Real life. But that's just... You know, something little that I would probably change. Just make it a minute longer. Even if it's you make the fist fighting part of it, because they lose their swords at a certain point.
Yeah.
Actually, at the very beginning. So beating the shit out of each other.
Throwing rocks at each other and
which
shit.
Which is hilarious. Yeah, which is funny. He pounds a rock and just pelts him with it. But yeah, as far as, you know, acting goes, I don't have a single complaint about anybody.
Nope.
Not a single person was just okay. Everyone brought it.
Yeah, they did. And speaking of throwing things, whenever he's telling Mercedes at the end, I'm to be arrested and go ahead and pack something. I've committed murder and corruption and piracy and
that was it.
When she tells him, "I'm not going with you." I don't know if this was Guy Pearce's decision to do this, if it was in the screenplay, if the director said do it. But when he picks up whatever that is and throws it into that mirror, it just shows what a giant fucking baby this character is.
I remember seeing that. And that one thing just kind of makes me chuckle a little bit because he just picks it up and, it's funny.
Yeah, because right then and there, you see everything this guy's about. He's a giant baby.
Well, he also, well, that was the last straw for him, because once she said, I'm not going with you, he had lost everything.
Lost control of everything, yeah.
No, he lost everything. Yeah. He already lost his fortune. He was going to jail. The one thing he had left in the world was Mercedes. She's like, I'm not going with you. Fuck! And then he's like, no, go and find my son. He's not your son. I beg your pardon. I'm surprised he didn't throw something there. Because
right?
That was his, that's what he said. He's like, I beg your pardon.
Oh, no, because he says he was always disappointing.
So he's the bastard son of a dead traitor. Dude, he doesn't care about anything.
No,
that's
he doesn't.
That's why I love that he's the only one out of the three people that got revenge taken upon them that had to die. They could have sent him away, or he could have lived in poverty the rest of his entire life, but no, it was so much more satisfying just to see him die.
Well, even Jacopo says that he's never going to stop. You have to end this.
Yeah.
Even the priest would understand that.
Oh, boy. That might be all I have. Because I can't sit here and quote the entire movie.
No?
I can't sit here and talk about the scenes I love the most, because I'll start at the beginning and then just go back to the end all over again.
There's a part of the film. I got one more thing, I think. Whenever we were discussing V for Vendetta, mm-hmm. and whenever V asked Evie if she liked the movie, and she said, yeah, but it made me feel sorry for Mercedes, because he cared more about revenge than he did about her. He shows this when he knows this is her son, and he tells him, if I have to, boy, I will kill you. He didn't care.
That's true.
He wanted revenge more, because that would have hurt Mercedes, not just Mondego.
I have never thought about that. You're right.
Yeah, I won't stop now. If I have to, I will kill you. And that's just it. It shows the depth that he had gone in his own mind and his own heart, that he didn't care about anything else but that moment.
Even after this whole thing takes place after. You know, Dantes and Mercedes spend the night together, and Jacopo comes in and says, you know, the Count wants you to join him in leaving the country with your son.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to take them away, and in that moment, he's like, I'll kill you if I have to, knowing full well that he was already going to leave with both of them.
Exactly.
Damn.
He could have knocked him out. He could have done anything. No, he was going to kill him until Mercedes came in and screamed no.
But he did disarm him one second before that no. So he had him where he couldn't defend himself anymore. Do you think he would have killed him or just gotten him out of the way? Because he was standing in his way, and once he was disarmed...
Hard to say.
It is.
Because
I never thought that he was going to do it.
Because that sword was right there in his chest. He was going to run him through.
Yeah, I was never sure. So
I don't think you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just shows that he just didn't care about anything else than getting his revenge. Because he told him, you sent me to hell. You took everything away from me. Why? Because you're the son of a clerk.
And I'm not supposed to want to be you. So, yeah, that's all I've got. I don't know about you.
Anything else? No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
So now
I love this movie.
It's so wonderful. Go watch it. Go buy it.
Yeah.
It's worth owning.
It is worth owning, and it's not that expensive.
No.
You can probably find this movie for like $5 or $6.
Because they don't know what they have.
Yep, exactly.
So,
and it's older and so on and so forth. But.
Yeah. So next week is another movie that we love. Shocking. I know. We do occasionally do movies that we don't like or disagree on.
Yeah.
But next week is...
And a genre we have not tackled yet.
Not really. I mean, Back to the Future 3...
Nah.
Not really.
Not really.
So next week is Tombstone.
Mm, my favorite Western.
Oh, God, yes. It's do you know, I looked up the Rotten Tomatoes score of this movie. It is in the 70s. Can you believe that bullshit?
Hmm.
Val Kilmer, Kurt Russell. Fuck, I love this movie so much.
Sam Elliott,
Bill Pullman.
Bill Paxton.
Paxton, yeah. I always get those
my
two
My least
confused.
Favorite actor on Earth.
My least favorite Bill. But I mean, you know, he passed away. He wasn't bad in this movie.
I tolerated this, him in this movie.
This and Twister are probably my two favorite roles that he does. Everything else, maybe Aliens. Maybe.
Yeah.
But next week is Tombstone. And then after that, we start Star Wars month.
Yes, we do.
And we are going to start with the prequels. So there's going to be a lot of hate.
Oh, we're starting with the prequels, huh?
Yes, we're going to start with the prequels. We're going to start 1, 2, and 3. Then we're going to do 4, 5, and 6. Then we're going to do
7 and 8.
We're not going to do the spinoffs. Just the ones in the main Skywalker trilogy or the series. And
yeah, no Rogue Ones or Solos or anything like that.
Yeah, so
no cartoons.
Yeah, there's only going to be 3 weeks of Star Wars week, or actually four. There's going to be the first episode will be the prequels, then the original trilogy, then the two movies that are in this new trilogy, and that episode will come out the day before The Rise of Skywalker comes out.
And then the week after, hopefully we can do Rise of Skywalker.
I think we can, because I will not be leaving town until Christmas Eve.
Okay.
So we will have time to record it and get it out.
Okay, good.
Because I know that I was going to... My plan was to leave town on Friday, which is the day after... The day it officially releases. Mm-hmm. But due to financial circumstances, I'm not leaving until a couple days later. So we'll get see it, and we can come in and record and put it out when necessary.
Awesome.
So,
if you guys are tired of hearing us gush on films,
just wait till the prequels.
Wait till the prequels, because I've got a lot of hate for this.
I'm going to need alcohol.
Yeah. We might just have to have some alcohol in here. Oh, my God. Because,
You thought we're going on 41 minutes now. You think this one's an long episode? Strap in. There's a lot of things we need to talk about.
Especially with the prequels.
And trust me, this is nothing that hasn't been said already.
No.
These movies have been out for a long time.
But I promise you this, that we will probably never mention Jar Jar Binks in this discussion.
No, we will not.
Because
I may do it one time, but I won't be doing it. We're talking about episode one.
No, we're not going to be bashing Jar Jar Binks the whole time.
No.
Because
there's one problem that I have with Jar Jar Binks, and it's not episode one, surprisingly.
Mm.
It is episode two or three Jar Jar Binks that I have a problem with.
Okay.
And we'll get into that. So if you're going to be listening, being like, oh, they're just going to rip on him. No, we're not.
No, we're not. Because we don't discuss him outside of this. We never mention him.
No.
Because he's not the biggest problem, and you'll see why.
People love to just rag on him because they think he's the biggest problem in the prequels. He is far from the worst thing ever.
Yes, he is.
He is just dumb comic relief that George Lucas threw in there, which I don't care about. It's his choice. It's his other choices that he makes.
Yes.
So get ready for that. And then we can talk about the joy that the original trilogy still brings to our hearts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then the that the other two movies have.
Okay.
They're very movies. Well, one of them's very eh.
One of them's very eh.
Okay. All right. We'll see you guys later. I'm Ian.
I'm Seth.
That was episode 15?
15?
I don't know. Well,
somewhere there.
Somewhere. Who cares? Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.